Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today, our guest is book reviewer Nancy Pearl. She returns to the program to offer gift suggestions for the readers in your family. Nancy's reading recommendations over the years have been the foundation for her four books about books, the Booklust series, and more recently, a new imprint series through Amazon, the Booklust Rediscovery series, which reprints her recommended out-of-print novels from the past 50 years. She's currently on book six of a scheduled 12 print run of books, and she joins us today to offer some holiday suggestions for gifts for the reader in your family. Nancy Pearl is our guest today. Nancy Pearl, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Rich.
And for your holiday gift list, you have an interesting array of books. There seems to be a book just about for any sort of reader in this. And you start out because of, you know, the popularity of the new movie Lincoln. You have a wonderful book by Stephen Carter, which imagines a very different sort of ending of Abraham Lincoln.
Right. So Stephen Carter is a law professor at Yale, African-American law professor, really a public intellectual. You can see him doing all these commentaries in various media outlets. And he has written over the past maybe 5-10 years a series of thrillers set in contemporary U.S. And I've always enjoyed them. They've not ever been something that I've felt like, oh, I got to talk about this book all the time, until the impeachment of Abraham Lincoln came along. And then I have to say, I sat down to start this book and didn't get up again until I finished it. That's what it felt like. I was so stiff when I finished this book. So this is kind of a parallel history, an alternate history of U.S. history, in which Abraham Lincoln was not killed, was not assassinated, and he went on to serve a second term as president. And during this second term, what happened was that the radical Republicans, the people in his own party, were so angry at him because they felt he was letting the South off too easily that they moved toward an impeachment of him. Now, what makes this book so great, I think, is not only do you get a really interesting take on American history, because Carter weaves both facts and fiction into this, but the main character in this book is a young African-American woman about 19 years old who wants to be a lawyer. And she apprentices herself to the lawyers who are defending Lincoln. And so you get not only that history, but you get race relations. You get so much that just feels so like a way of just looking at the past, and it just opens it up for you. It's a great, great read, and good for fantasy readers. It's good for, of course, people who like historical fiction. It's especially good, I think, for those people who are fans of Gore Vidal's, what he calls his Washington novels, Burr, which is this, a historical novel about Aaron Burr, and his own book called Lincoln. So if you're fans of those Gore Vidal books, which are also just out in new editions, then I would highly, highly recommend this book.
Well, of course, you know, as you well know, what happens in this book to Abraham Lincoln actually did happen to Andrew Johnson. It was the same
right.
sort of thing. Of course, he was never really a Republican to begin with, so
no.
He was sort of a Democrat Unity Party yeah. candidate, and of course he ended up as president and found himself impeached.
Right, for exactly the same reason.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
So that's Stephen Carter's The Impeachment of Abraham Lincoln. Next book on your list is Dan Fesperman's The Double Game.
The Double Game is a classic spy novel with a twist. The main character, when we meet him, is a young reporter, and he is interviewing an old CIA agent who, in the course of a kind of drunken dinner, says to him, you know, I thought at one time about being doubled and going to work for the KGB. And the subject drops and nobody says anything more about that. But years pass, and our hero is now working in an advertising company. And he gets a cryptic note one night that says something like, you should investigate that claim. And that sets him off on this journey into his own past, into his father's life. His father is Has worked for the State Department as a diplomat all over Cold War, Eastern Europe during the Cold War, and to try to find out the truth of whether that famous CIA agent, who went on to write a series of thrillers of his own in the book, was really a Russian agent. So, very exciting. What I loved best about this book, though, is that all of the clues and much of the plot is adapted from or uses other spy novels. And it's really fun. At the end of this book, he gives you a bibliography of his favorite spy novels. And it was so much fun for me to sit down and sort of check off, oh, yeah, I agree with him about this. Oh, I didn't think that was so good. Oh, yeah, he has this one. So this is, in addition to being a good spy novel, it's really a book about books.
So if you're a big fan of John le Carré or Alan First or any of these other writers that write about espionage fiction, you're going to love this book. So if you have somebody who, that's a great gift book then.
Yes, I think it is. And what is especially interesting is that these are not just the contemporary spy novels, but this goes back to Eric Ambler, some of Graham Greene.
Yeah,
so it's quite enjoyable.
Dan Fesperman's The Double Game. Up next was a finalist for the National Book Award, and we actually talked about this earlier this year.
We did.
And this is Ben Fountain's Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk.
Right. And since we talked about it last time, I won't take a long time talking about this, but just to say it is one of my top favorite novels of the year. And while I thought Louise Erdrich's The Roundhouse absolutely deserved the National Book Award, I wish that this one had won as well. This is the story of a squadron of soldiers, American soldiers, who are in Iraq fighting that war. President Bush brings them home for 2 weeks for a kind of victory tour to sway public opinion to the side of his policies. And the story takes place mostly on Thanksgiving Day in Dallas, where this group of young, mostly poor, many minorities, the people in the Army, Bravo Troop, are there hobnobbing with the wealthiest people in the Dallas, Texas area. And at halftime, they're going to get to, this is the high point of their whole two-week trip, they're going to get to be on midfield at halftime and meet Beyonce and Destiny's Child. This book is so wonderfully written. It's a book that just makes you so aware of the lives of these kids, and they are kids. And one of the things that really creates a cognitive dissonance for them, the characters as well as the reader, is that you both know that no matter how good these 2 weeks are for these kids, the next day, the day after Thanksgiving, they're going to fly back to Iraq and be right in the thick of the fighting again. And it's a wonderful book.
That's Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. It's written by Ben Fountain. The next book is really interesting. This is the sesquicentennial years of the Civil War, and you're seeing lots of books about the Civil War. And David Goldfield has written a very interesting book, America Aflame, How the Civil War Created a Nation, in which that subtitle gives you a sense of that optimism about the Civil War, but he actually, the point of the book is that this was a horrible failure, and it gets into how religion played a major role in the Civil War.
Yes, and that, I think, David Goldfield is a Southern historian. He teaches at one of the branches of the University of North Carolina, and I had never heard of him before. I'd never read any of his other books, but I was very taken with this book because it's the history of the Civil War, but it's the Civil War set in context. It's really in the years between the Revolutionary War and the formation of the nation, the next generation of leaders through the centennial, through 1876. And he looks at all of the different, the background, he looks at what was happening contemporaneously. And the thing that he really focuses on is the growth of evangelical Christianity in both the North and the South. It took different forms in the North and the South, but both of those devoted followers of evangelical Christianity, how that really made the path to the Civil War something that you couldn't divert from. It was just going to be headed that way as he would say, because of the intransigence of both sides.
Both sides saw everything in terms of black and white and
right.
good and evil.
Exactly. Does that sound familiar?
Yes. Doesn't it, though?
And I think that was one of the things that I really enjoyed about this book as well, is that it not only is to talk about the role of Native Americans or the building of the railroads or the gold rush, all in terms of the Civil War. You know, there's stuff about, of course, the Jim Crow laws, the failure of Reconstruction. But it takes, I think, these, especially for Northern readers, it takes these people who have become larger than life to us, like Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Harriet Beecher Stowe.
Harriet Beecher Stowe, who President Lincoln said, oh, so you're the little lady who started this great big war. It takes those kind of heroes, the abolitionist heroes that I certainly grew up worshiping because of the good that they did. It makes you think. And I think there can't be really higher praise for a nonfiction book, or fiction for that matter, for any work of literature, than it makes you think. And that book certainly did this.
David Goldfield's America, Flame, How the Civil War Created a Nation. My guest today is Nancy Pearl, our longtime book reviewer here on Studio Tulsa, as we talk about some great ideas for gift books for the holidays. Up next, two books by Timothy Hallinan, The Fear Artist and Crashed.
Now, yes.
It's very rare that you have two books by the same writer. So what's going on with Timothy Hallinan?
Well, Timothy Hallinan, for several years now, has done a wonderful thriller series that is set in Bangkok. The main character is a guy named Polk Rafferty, who's a travel writer, lives in Bangkok, and they're books that, the kind of books where you just want to turn the page to find out what happens next, but you're slowed down because you kind of want to savor a little bit of the writing, you want to think about these characters. These are thrillers, I would say, with a heart. This Polk Rafferty, and obviously Tim Hallinan, who lives in Bangkok most of the year, it really cares about the street children and the prostitutes and the sex tourists and how to prevent that from happening. So these are thrillers. All of the Polk Rafferty books are thrillers. And let me just say, they're thrillers with a lot of violence, a lot of violence. I think if people like Lee Child, that level of violence, mm-hmm. then they will enjoy the Tim Hallinan ones as well. And The Fear Artist is the newest one. You don't really have to read them in order. In fact, I hadn't read them for a long time, and then read The Fear Artist and then went back and started catching up again. But The Fear Artist, my husband Joe just finished it and just loved it as well. So I was very pleased about that because I don't do such a good job with him picking out books.
Well, it sounds like he makes you want to care about the locale, which usually the locale is a backdrop in thrillers
right.
and mysteries
yeah.
and things like that. So
yeah.
he really makes you stop and think about the locale as a
Absolutely.
Part of the book.
Absolutely. Place is really important in these books, and especially Bangkok with its sort of seamy side, which is where Polk Rafferty finds himself frequently.
All right. The two books are Crashed and The Fear Artist.
Okay, but wait. But Crashed is a whole new series with a whole new set of characters. And a whole new tone. Crashed is fun. The second and third books are coming out in maybe January and April, I think. And when I got Crashed, and I got Crashed and then advanced copies of the second and third book, that's all I did was read these books. I just would finish one, put it down, and then pick up the next one. I just thought they were great fun. The main character in this is a burglar who also acts as somebody who can get other criminals out of trouble.
A criminal fixer.
Exactly.
A Mr. Wolf, maybe, from Pulp Fiction.
That's perfect. Yes, he is a criminal fixer, or a criminal's fixer.
Right.
So they're great. Very, very different. You'd be hard-pressed if you didn't know they were by the same author. You would never think that.
Now, are they set in the Far East, or are they set completely
differently? No, they're set in the Far West, California.
Ah.
Los Angeles, Hollywood.
All right. Well, Timothy Hallinan's The Fear Artist is set in the Far East, Bangkok, and Crash, the new series, which has just got underway, set in California. That's two books by Timothy Hallinan. Up next is one of your series of books through Amazon, the Nancy Pearl series, Claire Huffaker's The Cowboy and the Cossack.
The Cowboy and the Cossack is this has long been one of my favorite books. This is one of the reasons why I wanted to do this series, because I wanted more people to be able to get copies and read this fabulous Western. This is A Cattle Drive with a Difference. A group of Montana cowboys in 1880 are hired by a group of Russians to bring a herd of cattle from Montana to a small town in Siberia. And they land in Vladivostok, and the landing, the first chapter, is just incredible. And then it just gets better and better and better. But this is about two strong men, the leader of the Cossacks and the head of the group of cowboys, coming from opposite ends of the world, opposite ends of the earth, and meeting and having to learn to respect one another or fail at their mission.
This must have been written during the Cold War.
It was written during the Cold War. But Claire Huffaker is a guy who spent his career, he wrote a couple of novels, but mostly he wrote screenplays. And his daughter wrote a really lovely blog post about this book that's going to be up on my website, I hope, by the first of the year. But I think people who, you know, this is the kind of book that I think dads would like, especially dads who liked Larry McMurtry's Lonesome Dove. It's not as long as Lonesome Dove, so that's one thing to say for it. But it's a page-turner, and you won't forget these characters.
Claire Huffaker's The Cowboy and the Cossack. Up next is Tim Kreider, We Learn Nothing, Essays and Cartoons. Tell us a little bit about Tim Kreider.
Well, Tim Kreider spent most of his adult life he's not that old. Maybe he's in his 40s. But he spent most of his adult life as a political cartoonist. During all the Bush years, he was a political cartoonist. And then he started writing essays. And this collection, We Learn Nothing, Essays and Cartoons, is mostly essays. There are maybe 8 little cartoons. This is not a graphic novel in any way, shape, or form. This, I have to say, was my favorite nonfiction book of the year. Even though Tim Kreider and I have, on the surface, demographically speaking, nothing in common, there was something in each one of these essays that I really connected with, that I would stop and say, wow, that's how I feel, but how come he could express it so much better than I could? There's essays on everything from the time he and a friend went to a Tea Party rally to the time that he spent with one of his closest friends, Jennifer Finney Boylan, when she was recuperating from her sex reassignment surgery, to the time he spent with his mother when the two of them read Tristram Shandy out loud. And I have to say, I've never read Tristram Shandy, even though I was an English major. I somehow escaped that. But I would be hard-pressed to believe that anyone could read his description of Tristram Shandy and not want to run out and get a copy of that book, which is exactly what I did.
Oh, all right. Well, that's Tim Kreider's We Learn Nothing, Essays and Cartoons. Up next, something by Rose McCauley.
Rose McCauley, The Towers of Trebizond, another book written during the Cold War. But this is about a group of people, Anglicans. They're all Anglicans from England, who are traveling through Turkey for various and sundry reasons. One is to try to convince the Turks that the church they should join is the Anglican church rather than Billy Graham's church. And Billy Graham is always like one step ahead of them on this tour. So there's Aunt Dot, who is one of the main characters, Father Chantry Pig, who is of course, high up in the Anglican Church, and the narrator, Laurie, who is along to help Aunt Dot, but also to illustrate the book that she's going to write about the plight of women in this third world country. This book begins with a wonderful line, which is, "Take my camel, dear," said my Aunt Dot, as she climbed down from this animal on her return from high mass. So in addition to all of the human characters, there is a chimpanzee who arrives later in the book, but there is a psychotic camel that Aunt Dot got as a gift from an Arab sheikh. Now, the best thing about this book, though, and the reason that I reread it like once a year, is that you get many clues, but nothing definitive to tell you whether Lori is a man or a woman. And each time I read it, I come up with a different conclusion. So it's one of those books that really bears rereading, and I think would make a really interesting book discussion too. And it's just out in a new edition from Farrar Straus, and I think I've seen every edition that it's ever been published in, and this has the best cover that I have ever seen for this book.
All right, that's Rose McCauley's The Towers of Trebizond. My guest today is Nancy Pearl, our book reviewer here on Studio Tulsa. She talks about some gift ideas for books this year. And we have time for a few more. Let's go to, speaking of book clubs, Will Schwalbe's.
I think Schwalbe. I'm not sure. I think.
Let's do that again. Okay. Will Schwalbe's The End of Your Life Book Club.
Okay.
This sounds like something for December 21st or something.
Right. Now, let me just say that with a title like this, I would never normally have read this book. I do not like mawkishness, and I do not like sentimentality, and I just steer clear of books like this. I don't like to be emotionally manipulated. Given that, I did not read this book. And then I got an email from a friend of mine at Will's publishing house, Random House, and she said, "Gee, Nancy, I really think you'd like this book. Take a look at it, and then let me know your thoughts." So I'm always obedient. So I sat down and I started this book, and I was just so taken with this book. It is not mawkish. It's not sentimental. It's not emotionally manipulative. It's a wonderful, wonderful story. Not a happy story, because his mother, this is a memoir. Will's mother is dying rather quickly of stage 4 cancer. And she and Will decide that they're going to talk about books on the times that he's accompanying her to her chemotherapy, doctor's appointments, etc. So you would think, because I love books, that it would be the books that I would be so interested in. No. What I loved about this book is the wonderful portrait of this remarkable woman who was his mother. And first of all, she does something that I didn't think anybody but me ever did, which was, no matter what book it is, I always read the last chapter first. And she does that, too. So I bonded with her immediately.
Now, I have to ask you, why do you do that?
Because I don't want to be surprised. I can deal with anything. I can deal with anything as long as I have enough time to prepare.
You know, we've talked about this before, but given the state of modern publishing and the weakness of a lot of endings of novels,
right.
I can imagine if I took that approach, there'd be a lot of novels I would never even start.
Yes, I think that's true.
Well, it was a good read. The name of the book is The End of Your Life Book Club by Will Schwalbe.
Yep.
What would you like to talk about next?
Let's talk about a novel for teens.
Okay.
Okay, the last one, Elizabeth Wine's Codename Verity. This is a historical novel. It's for older teens, I'm going to say 15, 16, and up. I think adults will like it, too. Before I talk about the book, though, I want to say, in my opinion, the cover is a mistake. I think it gives a sense, not the right sense of the book. It's not a cover that makes you, or it didn't make me think, oh, I've got to read this book. The only reason I read this book was because, again, a friend at the university bookstore here loved it and said I would really like it, too. And she was right. So it's set during World War II. It's a story of two girls who go to work for the government during World War II. They fly into France and parachute out over occupied France. And one of them is captured pretty quickly. The other one has disappeared. We don't know what's happened to her. The book opens with Verity having been captured, tortured, and forced to tell her story, everything she knows about the British effort to win the war, particularly are their plans to for the invasion of Europe, etc. And because she doesn't want to die, and because she doesn't want to be tortured anymore, she agrees that she's going to write this all down. And then the book goes on. And I have to say, Rich, when you finish this book, you'll want to turn around and read it all over again, because all the clues are there. Everything is there. And yet the author handles it so adroitly that you don't think something is important until you get to the end.
No, that's a good book then.
Yes. And I have to say that this book, interestingly enough, Codename Verity, has something in common with The Cowboy and the Cossack, but I can't say any more than that.
All right. That's Elizabeth Wine's Codename Verity. We have time for one other book. And what's your choice?
Let's do The Last Night at the Ritz by Elizabeth Savage, okay. Partly because it has a fabulous cover. And I think that this is a book, if you're sort of waiting for the new Mad Men, the new season of Mad Men to begin, and you like that period, this is a book set in 1971, 1972, and the cover is so wonderful. I mean, just go look at that cover. It's just a fabulous, fabulous cover. But this is the story of a longtime friendship between two women who meet as freshmen in college and are still friends in their 50s and 60s. And they have come together. One of them still lives on the East Coast. One lives on the West Coast. But the one on the West Coast has come back East, and they decide to have lunch at the Ritz, or to meet for drinks at the Ritz. And those drinks just kind of segue on into dinner. So over the course of that one day, we get, through flashbacks, a lot of stuff about their lives and friendship and the men in their lives, what happened to them. What is so wonderful about this book is that there is a line or two on every single page that you will want to write down and remember. You know, I have a notebook where I keep all these lines, but like one of the lines is, it is very dangerous to be caught without something to read. Another line is, you can't always carry an encyclopedia with you, but you can always have your flask. it's that kind of thing.
All right. It sounds like a fun book. The Last Night at the Ritz, Elizabeth Savage. The books will be on our website. Nancy, thanks very much, and have a wonderful holiday. We'll see you in 2013.
Thanks, Rich. Bye.
Nancy Pearl is a former Tulsa librarian, the author of the Book Lust series of books, and our longtime book reviewer here on Studio Tulsa. For more information on the titles we talked about today, visit the Studio Tulsa page at our website, publicradiotulsa.org. And for more information on Nancy's other recommendations, visit her own website, including information about the Book Lust Rediscovery series that's available at nancypearl.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.